This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Sarah Pascoe.
Hello, I'm Carriad Lloyd.
And we're weird about books.
We love to read.
We read too much.
We talk too much.
About the too much that we've read.
Which is why we've created
The Weirdos Book Club.
Join us!
A space for the lonely outsider to feel accepted and appreciated.
A place for the person who'd love to be in a real book club but doesn't like wine or nibbles.
Or being around other people.
Is that you? Join us.
Check out our Instagram at Sarah and Carriad's Weirdos Book Club for the upcoming books we're going to be discussing.
You can read along
and share your opinions.
Or just skulk around in your raincoat like the weirdo you are.
Thank you for reading with us. We like reading with you. This week's book guest is Come and Get It by Kylie Reid.
What's it about? It's about a college professor researching a book, which turns into an eavesdropping exercise and the fallout from that.
What qualifies it for the Weirdos Book Club? Well, it examines the power dynamics created by wealth and status, but through female relationships. In this episode, we discuss reviews,
Arkansas,
university life,
crochet,
and The Secret.
Hello, Sarah Pascoe.
Hi.
Hi. We don't have a guest this week. It's a special Sarah and Carriad chat, fireside chat.
Yeah. We've had such sort of A-list authors. do I disappoint you?
No, I went through my bookshelves the other day and I had like 4 copies of your book and I thought, embarrassing.
We've got 4 copies of your book.
Have you?
Okay. Yeah, because I've got the proof.
Yeah, I've got proof.
The hardback. And then Steen and I both bought one at your book launch.
Aww.
So we've got 2 signed. A proof and an answer. So when you see them on eBay.
We are talking today about Kylie Reid's new book, Come and Get It. You may be familiar with Kylie Reid because she's the author of the book Such a Fun Age that was a huge bestseller and also got nominated for the Booker in 2021,
I think.
Went to the Booker as well.
Did it?
Mm.
I didn't know it went to the Booker, but
I think it was big American bestseller UK and then ended up on the book. So it was one of those like, oh, cherry on the cake.
Yeah.
You got nommed for the Booker.
It's very rare that really, really popular books are then also literary sensations.
Her first book. So this is her second fiction.
And so did you read, because that was my first question, did you read Such a Fun Age?
Yes, I read Such a Fun Age, loved it, really enjoyed it.
Yes.
It's extremely of our time, prescient novel. And I really, I remember really enjoying it. So I was very excited. And when we did our episode, Books to Be Excited About, we both were excited about this one. Thought the cover looked good.
Yeah.
Even though I'm just going to let readers know, it's a heavy one. It's a chunk. It's no Mantell, but it's nearer to a Mantell than it is an Annie Ernaux.
You call it a chunk. I'd say this is a size 10 in books
and
book world. Yeah, I would. I think this is very, very average size book.
Yeah, you are right. I think it's just I'm not used to hardbacks as well. Yeah. When you get hardback in the old backpack.
But I was worried.
Yeah.
Because
did you like
Such a Fun Age? Is so fantastic.
So brilliant.
And manages to do so many things.
Yes.
And I imagine if you're a very successful novelist with your very first novel like that, you might then go, now here's my sci-fi.
Well, she says she wants to write in all genres. That's one of her things.
What I loved about Come and Get It is that if you did love Such a Fun Age, it felt like a lot of similar themes being discussed
in
a very fresh environment, new takes, even more up to date in terms of what society has been talking about since then.
Yeah, I would say the main theme with this, though, is money. So it's all about, compared to what Such Fun Age really is, really dealing with race much more, this is much more, although race is in there, this is about money and class and other things.
Yes.
But there's a large part discussing money and what it means and privilege.
Money affects the power intersections. But Such a Fun Age was still that because you have a nanny and the employer.
True. But it came from like a race point of view immediately. Mm. Whereas this is not like I was expecting. I was like, oh, I wonder if she's going to hit on that topic straight away. Whereas I feel like it was there, but it wasn't leading the fray.
I guess the volumes were up.
Yeah.
At different points.
So we should say it's set in a college, American college system. Mm-hmm. It follows a professor called Agatha Paul, who's had a success with a grief book.
Well, yes, obviously I want to ask you about
Satellite Grief.
We will
talk about that, Satellite Grief. Yeah. And then she has written a book about money, and she's going to interview these college students, and she meets these three kind of very, what seems quite vacuous sort of, I don't know what the modern term would be, but they're kind of like...
She's an author, and as they're speaking, she's sort of enjoying their vernacular because it's a use of language she isn't familiar with.
They're quite teenage, they like weddings.
Being sort of 15 or 20 years older does make you a different generation. Yeah.
So it's about these three college students who she interviews, and then they have this thing called the RA.
Yeah.
I don't know if you found this, the American college system is so confusing to me. So the RA is like, I guess, like the in charge of their dormitory.
But we did have those at Sussex. It's just they weren't hands-on like this.
And they weren't paid. Like, this is like a paid job.
It was for their CVs, do you remember?
Vaguely.
Resident
assistant is what the RA is, isn't it?
On every floor, there was just one student who was a mature student.
Oh, yeah, we did have a mature student.
Yeah, and that was your RA.
So, yeah, it starts with these three college girls and then one of them...
They mention the really important detail is that when they're having this first chat, Agatha is there to research a book about weddings, she thinks.
Yeah.
And they mention practice checks.
Yes.
And being paid by their parents.
One is paid by her dad. Yeah.
Fun money. There's a couple of phrases that make Agatha realise... Money is the thing she wants to write
Yes, so
about.
She wants to write about. Millie is their RA. She's had a difficult home situation. She's back in this dormitory again, which is seen as a bit of an odd thing to do as an RA, but it means she's paid to work for the university.
And she's black.
And she's black. And that's important in terms of the other characters.
Well, actually, because those three girls in that very first chat, they refer to her as ghetto. They use an example and she overhears.
Yes, so there's lots of overhearing. And then there are... one of the girls, and it's three college girls, and there are a lot of characters. One of the girls, Tyler, lives in what's called a suite. That means there's three girls. So one has a single, two of them have a double. And it begins with this confrontation over who gets to share the double, who gets to share the single, or be on their own. And we meet Kennedy, who's this girl who turns up with way too much stuff, like lots of live, laugh, love kind of things. And
so I think TK Maxx has a different name in America.
So they're calling it Target, they have another name for TK Maxx.
Yeah, Kennedy's room, and this is right near the beginning as we're meeting her character, the stuff is really important. Her and her mum. And it's not just, oh, you know, she's got a lot of clothes. She's got like a hostess trolley.
Yeah.
And electronic posters. Coffee machine.
Yeah. So she has all this stuff, and Tyler kind of arranges by talking to Millie behind Kennedy's back to get her in the single because she doesn't want to share a room with her, and her and Peyton, this other girl who is very odd in her own other way, end up in the double, which means that Kennedy's completely isolated, completely alone. She doesn't have friends. She doesn't get invited to things because she's not in that. They seem to have this kind of boarding school vibe about their colleges because they're sharing rooms and they're going and do things.
You feel sorry for Kennedy?
Yeah, I did feel sorry for Kennedy. But it's a difficult novel. I feel like there's so many characters. Like, I just want the listeners to like know there's a lot going on. Yeah. So we have Agatha's like ex-girlfriend. She's moved away.
But
you have Millie, the RA.
Confusing?
No, I just think it. I found it a bit too wide.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I found it like this is a lot of people, and I'm not sure. Yeah. So yeah, this.
What I really loved about the population of characters. I didn't ever feel confused. I knew who everyone was. It jumps forward and backwards in time, as well as, you know, all of the characters get a little bit of explanation about where they've come from as well. But it felt like a big, bustling university with lots of people experiencing similar issues in upside down ways.
I think my my hesitation is I sometimes, with this book, and I loved Such a Fun Age, I sometimes wondered what was she wanting me to think, or what was happening. So when it's so broad, you know what I mean? So you're like, okay, so it's these people and these people and these people, and I'm following this, I'm following this, I get it, I'm not confused, I get it, but what's happening? Okay. Like, what do you want me? And I felt, compared to Such a Fun Age, where it felt like so directed and precise, does that make sense? That I was like, I'm not sure what you want me to think.
There's
here.
A couple of things that I'm going to add in to see if this helps you. Sure. I can't speak on behalf of the author. Now, number one, I thought the cleverest thing that Kylie Reid has done, there are no straight white men in this book.
Yes, that's so true.
So she took men out of the power, sex, money dynamic and went, they're still there.
Mm.
So she takes...
That's a great essay to write.
Yeah. Every time we have debates or discussions about people who abuse their power, people who use their status or money to, you know, maybe manipulate or seduce somebody younger with less... That whole discussion is going on, exactly the same human behaviours, problematic human behaviours. All of that happens without a man.
Yeah, that's true. I hadn't noticed that.
Exactly, because it's not rammed down your throat.
Yeah.
It's only if you're trying to think about it for a book podcast that you go, hang on a minute.
I definitely enjoyed it as a read. I had that slight, because she's so good at tension and characters, that you are like, oh my God, well, what will they do? When they did the thing, I thought, oh, still not sure... Do you know what I mean?
I'm going to ask you a question.
Yeah, ask me a question.
Did you read the acknowledgements at the end?
Oh, well, you normally do, yeah.
Yeah, did you read them?
Well, now I'm doubting myself.
It was based on real students.
Yes, I did, because I also read a Guardian interview with her talking about it.
So I didn't know that until I'd finished, and it added a whole level. To know that those phrases were used by real students, and then she included them in a fiction, I thought was an incredibly... clever thing to do, but it might be the reason why you, if you did feel it to be slightly underpaced,
no, it wasn't underpaced. It's just like it didn't quite deliver what it was pacing.
Mm.
Like when you got there to where you'd been running, you were like, oh, just here, this is where we were run. Like someone's like, come and see, and you open the door and you go, oh, okay, you spent 200 pages to get me here.
Yeah,
that's interesting.
What did you want? Someone to get murdered. In the car park.
Let me read an interview from her, because I think this is what you're talking about, which is really good. So she said, I knew I wanted to write about young people and money, says Kylie Reid. She had finished editing her debut, The Much Loved Such a Fun Age, and was completing her master's degree in fiction at the University of Iowa. She began interviewing undergraduates about their relationship to money, paying them $15 for 40 minutes of their time. She asked them about their interpretation of load-bearing words like classy and trashy. One student mentioned her dad's habit of paying her practice paychecks from his office payroll, though she did not work for him. It seemed Reid had stumbled upon a creative way to practice corporate fraud. She also had the beginnings of a new novel. That's from the Guardian piece about her. And I agree, it is really interesting. I don't know, and I really feel guilty. Is it that second novel thing? Like I'm holding up Such a Fun Age the whole time. And I'm not letting Come and Get It be Come and Get It.
Yeah.
You know, you're not like, it's just not Such a Fun Age. It isn't that. Second child. It's different. Yeah. It's difficult, guys, for my son.
Well, because I thought it was better.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. I thought it's exactly what you want
reviews
for a novelist.
Disagree with you, interestingly. Not saying you're wrong, just like I read lots of reviews.
Am I being reviewed?
No, it's very like
Sarah is wrong. One star.
It's had lots of mixed reviews, which I found interesting.
I don't care about reviews.
No, I know you don't. But it was interesting
to me.
They're
cleverer than me.
Yeah,
I don't think
you're very confident in your opinions.
I am confident in my opinions.
That's good.
Do you know what? There are so little I am actually confident about, and it's because I've read so much.
Yes, you have. That's official.
And a little bit like the jingle at the beginning of our show, and I think about it so deeply.
Yeah.
And
why did you think it was better than Such a Fun Age?
In its less extreme.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And its temperedness.
Yes, you enjoyed that.
I felt it. No, it's not about enjoyment. I thought it was really holding a mirror up.
Ooh,
rather than having to plot it in a way to hold a mirror up, but also have some more exciting things happen.
Yeah. And I, the mainstream audience, demand, where's the car going into a fireball?
Where's the lady in the bikini?
I
was left feeling truly uncomfortable. And that's because these are really uncomfortable,
ongoing, left feeling that uncomfortable. No. I felt like, oh, something's going to happen. That's more what I had.
Okay, I'm going to ask you a question.
Yes, go for it.
So if Millie was asked in 10 years about her relationship.
Oh, actually, this storyline I did love. Yes, that was my favourite bit.
Yeah.
So she was my favourite character.
She was a very, very well drawn
character.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
we really like her. We see how hard she works, how little she really wants, how anything that's going to come to her in life, she's going to have to earn. We can't yeah. help but respect people that yeah. live that way. It's completely different to the people who come from money. You and I don't come from moneyed backgrounds.
I beg your pardon.
No,
how
dare you? No one's going to, you know.
It's like, do you remember when I said to Humphrey Carr once, I accidentally called him upper middle class, and he was like, excuse me, I'm upper class. And I've never had anyone correct me on that before. I loved Millie and Millie's story. I felt a bit sorry for Millie. And also I felt like Kylie was doing these things sometimes where people did really small things that really fucking backfired on them. And I was a bit like, is the moral of this story like, whatever you do, something's gonna, do you know what I mean? There was tiny things that then people were like, well, now your life
they're
is
not, it's
ruined.
Not, they're not just tiny things, they're tiny, but they're transgressions. Mm. And that's the point, is transgressions. There's a reason that you feel a bit, oh, I shouldn't have done that. So as someone who makes my work from my life,
yep.
that whole discussion and thing
oh, yes.
is very, very sophisticated.
Yes.
More, and this is why I say I do think it's a more sophisticated novel
yeah,
than
that's
Such a Fun Age, which is an absolute smasher. This isn't me criticising either book.
No, no.
So Agatha is overhearing the people that she once paid honestly, saying I'm researching yes. for something, and now, so now she's secretly listening.
She's eavesdropping
quite,
on
that's
them.
That's quite a transgression.
Yes, oh,
she
huge.
Then, she then
huge.
Publishes
in Teen Vogue exactly what they're saying.
Even if it wasn't a big magazine, even if it was just on a blog, slightly disguising them,
but not really.
But, yeah. also, but then sometimes that's worse. You're then changing who someone is. So if they recognise half of themselves, they go, "Why have you made me that?"
Yeah, yeah.
Or, "Oh, you've made me dumber." Or,
yeah.
So. The whole thing about using real people, and that's what I loved about when I read the acknowledgements and realised, oh, she actually did interview real people who knew she was going to write a book, and then she's written this book.
Yeah, it's interesting,
and
isn't it?
There's so much of that now, and because of online, people find out.
Mm.
And I mean...
But I thought that was interesting that she has a character in the book who eavesdrops on students and then puts them into a book, and she, Kylie Reid, interviews students
people.
And put them into a book, and she makes the character suffer morally for that choice.
Yes.
But when I read an interview with her, yeah. she was like, oh, they were all super keen, and actually they were like, please can we be in your book more?
But that's because she didn't transgress. She was
yeah,
honest.
Yeah, true, true.
And so it seems like, especially with the acknowledgements, is the person who said practice paychecks
yeah.
was asked, I love this.
Yeah.
I'm going to use that yeah, if you yeah. don't mind. Like, this has made me really excited for my work. However, it was phrased to them, and they felt like they were part of someone's creative process who was then going to create a fiction.
Yeah.
Whereas if Kylie Reid had then started listening to people
putting
in
on
secret,
Teen Vogue. I found Agatha a really difficult character. Like, I didn't like Agatha. Mm. And I found...
Is it because she was too tall?
She was too tall. Tall women who do not see me. It's very problematic. Yeah, yeah, I've really felt for Millie and Kennedy, those who are definitely the sort of the most vulnerable characters. Yeah. And I think...
Agatha should know better.
Oh, Agatha fucking know better. And her constant refrain was, no one knows what I'm doing.
Yeah.
I thought that was really interesting, those chapters where she'd go for a walk or she'd go and buy sushi, and her constant feeling, because she's moved to Arkansas away from her girlfriend.
It's not pronounced Arkansas.
It is not pronounced Arkansas.
But it's written Arkansas.
Did you think it was Arkansas?
I thought Arkansas and Arkansas were different places.
Oh, sad.
In America, yeah.
No, same place.
Saw one written down, heard the other one, didn't know it's the same place.
And her constant refrain is, no one knows what I'm doing. No one knows what I'm doing.
Do you
and
not have that sometimes?
But I thought it was good writing, yes, really interesting that this woman had like lost her mind on the power of people not knowing what she was doing.
Oh, okay.
And that's why she started, abusing is not the right word, but... manipulating Millie, manipulating the situation. I mean, and I wanted to shake her and be like, fuck's sake, when people do know where you are.
It could be argued that there's abuses of power.
Yes, I didn't want to say the word abuse.
I know, abuse is a very,
and have
very
people
strong word.
Worry that that's what's in the book.
Exactly.
It's not that. It's abuse of power, definitely. Yeah.
The relationship with Robin, again, I think is so well placed, because I really like Robin. We really
Did
like
you?
This dancer with no money who then doesn't really respect it. And
yeah.
there's an example, I know, especially as someone who's had, a series of relationships with men who don't earn very much money, and which means that you do, if you want to do things, you pay for it. So the way that someone behaves when you've paid for things.
Yeah. I agree with you. It is a sophisticated way of writing, but it's a bit frustrated. I felt frustrated as a reader because I was like, I don't know what Agatha's really learned from this. I don't know what's changed. I don't know what I'm supposed to feel about Agatha. I just felt kind of annoyed with her.
No, if it had been a man, we wouldn't have expected him to change.
No, but in a novel, you do expect characters to change. That's not about gender. That's like, you're telling me a story, I'm expecting change. I don't mean like, she realises she's bad. Yeah. I mean just like that arc of storytelling. And I felt a bit like, it's not doing storytelling arc, it's giving you a snapshot of a moment and letting you decide, which is lovely. But I also felt a bit like, oh, I thought you were about to tell me something. But I will say, I couldn't put it down.
Yeah.
And I sat in Chancery Lane Station for 25 minutes because I was like, I have to finish this.
Yeah.
So it's it had a weird effect on me.
So what did the reviews say?
Well, it's just very mixed. One quote that I thought was interesting from the Sydney Morning Herald was, the novel is rife with gossip but seems unsure of its central goal. And when I read that, I was like, oh yeah, that is a bit how I feel. Like, it was a bit unsure of what you wanted or what you were doing. Whereas I feel with Such a Fun Age, I was like, I know what you're trying to tell me. And it's not moral message or like everyone works out. It's just like, oh, I feel like you know.
Well, actually, we found it really difficult to describe at the beginning.
Yes.
And maybe that's the thing.
Yeah.
Whereas you don't find that with Such a Fun Age.
Yeah, it's much clearer.
It's this.
Yeah. And then there was a funny bit. There's a line in it, which I thought was really funny. Yeah. Where she describes a character looking like a backpack. Do you remember this?
Yeah, yeah.
And she's like, oh, is it Simmy? She's like, Simmy looks like a backpack. I can't tell you why, she just does. And I thought, that's funny. Loads of the reviews picked up on that, of like an example of terrible writing. Like several articles were like, I mean, this, someone looks like a backpack. I mean, what? And I was like, oh, I thought that was just, I genuinely thought that was I know what you mean. She looked like a backpack.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a metaphor.
I know. Yeah. It was funny. Lots of it said that they thought the writing was not very good, which I did think was harsh. I didn't feel that. I feel like they're unsure of its central goal for me. I was like, oh yeah, that's definitely how I felt. Mm. Like, I think we're both right as ever. Yeah. It's like, it's aiming for something bigger than Such a Fun Age, and whether it quite achieves it is dependent on how you know the reader. And I felt that's how I felt slightly. And I was like, I'm not quite sure what's happening.
I mean, I wouldn't be able to ever review books because some of the things I think that they're saying are negatives, I think are strengths. Like you say with that sentence.
Yeah.
I think that's an audacious description of
audacious.
A character.
Yeah.
It's not saying they have brown hair.
Yeah.
Brown as the trees in the field. It's an author making a joke.
Yeah, I thought it was funny. And I thought some of it was very funny. I thought there were some really good characters and really good observations.
This is why I couldn't be a reviewer. I really enjoyed it. As soon as I started reading, I was like, oh, what a treat. And I wasn't necessarily expecting that. You know, hugely love the first novel, second one. You're always like, And then as soon as I started and I was enjoying it so much, that's all that mattered to me.
Yeah.
It was a really, really enjoyable read.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
So let's talk about, Agatha's published a book on grief.
Oh, yes.
Called Satellite Grief.
That's
which I Googled
first
today.
Book. Oh, yeah.
To see if satellite grief was a thing.
Okay.
And it doesn't seem that it is.
No, I was going to say, is it? Because I've never heard of it. I was like, oh, shit.
You're going to have to add a bit to your book about grief.
Add acknowledgements.
And Satellite Grief is this new movement in grief.
Oh, no. So Agatha Paul, in the story, she's written this book called Satellite Grief because an incident happened to her when she was a teenager where she caused an accidental death. Mm-hmm. And it was obviously very traumatic. And she wrote this book about grief and what it means. Kennedy, this other character, has another incident that happens to her. Oh, yeah, I wonder how you feel about that.
This is where I think audacious author, the incident to Kennedy is so horrific
But it's but also I want to caveat that with listeners, like, it's horrific but small. It's not what you're, it's not like
exactly
chainsaw
because
massacre
because of the
horrific
human emotions involved.
Yes, it's a very,
when you call it a trauma,
yeah,
you something might come to mind, like, oh, that person was assaulted or that person
yeah
was,
it's
you
not
know,
that
robbed
yeah
it's not those things. It feels very plucked from the real world at the same time as being something you've never heard anything like.
Yes,
it.
And that's also what's happened to Agatha. She accidentally, I don't think this is a
no,
spoiler.
No.
So she's in her car as a teenager. There is a man at the side of the road. His dog runs out onto the into the street, holding the lead, pulls the man into her path of her car. She brakes, but the man has a heart attack. Mm. So she's involved in the situation, but she doesn't run over somebody. And so that's what a lot of this book is dealing with, small incidents of life that if you say them out loud are not like, and then a man came with a chainsaw and hacked everyone's legs. It's not that, but it is those small tragedies that derail people's lives and affect them. So Agatha writes this book, Satellite Grief, which Kennedy finds and becomes hugely important to her.
And that's why she's chosen this university.
That's why she's chosen this university
to
and
meet,
she wants to
go on her course.
Go on her course. And I found all of that very heartbreaking. But yeah, what did you want to ask me about Agatha Paul's grief book?
Did you feel that it was making a joke about grief? Did you feel that it was an interesting angle on it or not important at all?
I can't tell with Kylie Reid sometimes when she's joking as well. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's an edge with her of like, I couldn't tell if it was almost a satire of like something kind of not big happened to Agatha and she wrote a whole fucking book about grief as if she was an expert on these things and it had become this sort of strange bestseller. Do you think of Agatha Paul's Satellite Grief?
It felt like rather than taking something that's more quotidian, like, you know, losing a parent, losing someone you really,
because
really
you're expecting
love.
Tragedy
and that's a tragedy, a very familiar tragedy. She'd pick something a bit more, I want to say interesting, but I don't mean interesting, I mean unusual.
No, I know what you mean.
There's a book called Bright Young Women, which I don't think you should read.
Okay.
And it's a fictionalised version of two women affected by Ted Bundy.
Oh, yeah. No, right. I won't read
but
that. You have told
about,
me about
but
it.
But it's a book about complicated grief, which
right,
obviously
yeah.
I don't really understand or
this
know
is
much
a,
about.
A new thing, yeah.
But the therapy group that one of the people, so who was... at university when Ted Bundy broke in.
Oh, yes, yeah.
And the students and he murdered one of her friends and she was effectively the RA who ran around to the rooms.
Right.
Got hospital organised these four girls and then had to go and speak in court against Ted Bundy.
Wow.
That's a very, very complicated grief.
And that's official complicated grief.
Yeah, the book has obviously done so much research in it.
Because complicated grief, we should say, is a new term. It's about 10 years old and it's very big in America and it's not always recognised in other countries.
Yes.
But it's a very big thing where your grief continues to exist at the rawness of day one and it will not change.
Because for some people, really, really sadly, the time or the manner in which the person, they lose, you know, their person dies, means that it isn't as simple as, like, I miss them, I love them.
Yeah, although it can happen.
Yes.
It's happened to people who just have a parent die after an illness.
Exactly.
They feel like they're still, like, as if it's just happened.
Yeah, or they're still very angry with the person.
Yeah.
So an emotion might mean, you know, if you can't let go of that.
But it's very recognised in America and there's lots of centres, university research projects going on. So it's
that's because we're British.
We're British.
Yeah.
But it's a very new controversial word in the field of grief.
Is it?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay.
I did a Radio 4 documentary about it.
Sorry.
It's absolutely cool.
Carrie's like, yeah, Sarah, like my documentary?
Yeah, called What We Know About Grief. And it is like a new idea.
Well, I was interested. I thought, Satellite Grief, maybe that's another.
I see, yeah, no.
But it's not.
No.
Using real people in work, right? When you were doing sketch comedy.
Yes, when we were doing sketch comedy.
Yes, but did you ever base a character on a real person and then think, oh God, I hope Alan doesn't come and see?
Do you know what? I'm very lucky in that everything I did was so odd that it wasn't based. So
I was trying to remember. Yeah. Like that parkour French guy wasn't based on anyone.
Jacques
that
Lecoq was Moomin Mama. Jacques Lecoq, the French parkour expert. Andrew, the 7-year-old stand-up.
He wasn't real, no.
No, he was sort of based on what I imagine my husband to have been like at 7.
Okay.
Because I wore his Doctor Who tank top. But like, I didn't know him at 7, so it was a sort of a joke. And then, Joey Bechamel was a spoof Zooey Deschanel.
Yes. Yeah.
But my comedy never came from real people, definitely not. But when I'm doing writing now, yes, it does.
Yeah.
And that is a very uncomfortable place. Because I think character comedy, it was so big and weird.
Yeah.
You could bring people in, but it was all so distorted, like no one would have recognised themselves. But obviously you, stand up.
I got caught out a few times at the beginning, once with you as well. I remember...
I very much overreacted to you once talking about what I was doing in stand-up.
But I was being very dismissive of something that meant something to you. And it's horrible to have someone talking about you on stage.
Should we talk about it?
Yeah.
So I can only vaguely remember what happened.
So this is my version of events. You can tell me if I'm wrong. So it was a very small room at the Pleasance. I was very a new stand-up. Pleasance, yeah. And I started talking about how... my best friend who I was living with was reading the book The Secret.
Oh, that's not what I remember.
Oh, great. Okay, yeah. So we do have different versions. Reading The Secret, and then afterwards, and I was being very dismissive and calling it stupid. And yeah. Then afterwards you were saying it's so difficult because people in the audience were looking at me like they knew that you were talking about me.
But do you know what it is? Yeah. I'd forgotten that because actually what you did is... I was temping, and that day, I'm sure this is what my memory is, that day I'd gone for an audition to be in a crocheting video because I could crochet.
Oh no, I did. I made fun of you asking the universe.
And I had, I'd had to go and show them I could crochet, and they were going to like film me crocheting for like a video. And that's how desperate I was. Yeah. I was like, £100 for a crochet video. Yes, yeah. Wow. And you made some reference to that. It wasn't a secret. You made some reference to the crochet thing. But you'd already said my best friend, so people already knew, they were like, look at me. And then you said like this sort of like pathetic crochet video. And you know when your life is so pathetic? And then someone on stage said it, you're like, oh. And what I remember actually saying to you was like, it's very funny, I can't handle it. Like, I am too vulnerable for you to make jokes about my life.
That's the thing about the responsibility of doing it, is you don't realise you are going to hurt people.
I don't remember The Secret at all. That's really funny.
That's why I referenced the audition. Yeah. Because the example I was using... is like asking the universe for something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It wasn't because I thought the audition was pathetic. I thought asking the universe was pathetic.
Yes, you were definitely calling me pathetic.
Or ridiculous.
You were definitely calling me ridiculous. At the Pleasance. And then I sat there and thought, it was just when, it's that thing when someone makes a funny joke, but it's your life and you're like, I have to wake up tomorrow and live it. And you feel like, oh, don't point out that my shoes are stupid. I have to wear them.
And so that's the thing. So stand-up is all fine when no one hears what you're saying about them on stage.
Yes.
And then as I got slightly more successful and things were either on the radio or TV, that's when it became a massive problem with my family.
Yes.
But then it was, all of these topics are off. You're not allowed to do this. You're not allowed to say that. You know, Cheryl's a teacher. We've interviewed her on the for our teaching ads. She's like, you could lose me my job if you talk about something I did when I was a child.
That's more serious than Carrot's crocheting audition is on the line.
There are ramifications. And do you remember that story, Cat Person?
And then that
became a huge success, which you don't necessarily know if you're writing a short story. Yeah. And then that was based on a true person.
Yeah, and then they found out, obviously recognised themselves.
And took his own life.
Oh, is that what happened?
Yeah.
Oh, I did not know that.
Which then spawned a whole load of journalism, which is about what is the writer's responsibility to real people. Because legally, and you know this when you wrote your book, you do a little bit of disguising.
Yeah.
A little bit, you know, you can't search for them, find out who it is. They can't be taken to court. But if they know it's them, what's the emotional responsibility?
I think she's done a very good job in this book of writing about them in kind of a rounded way. So I think that's what I do think is very skillful. Which is why I think the reviews saying she's not a good writer are really, that's not true.
That's really, really not true. For me, I think she's masterful. What she has is a character saying, this is clearly me.
Yes.
And if you'd have asked me, I would have said yes, because I'd have said yes to anything you wanted.
Oh, that bit was really, that ending. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was really.
And that for me, that felt like that was the end of the arc.
Yes. Yeah, I know what you mean. I think it
was someone going, why can't you be more decent?
Yeah.
Like the Millie, a really decent character, saying, why didn't you just ask people? And with the transgression, it's like, why didn't you?
Yeah, that's true. That is.
Did you think you were going to get better information? It was a little bit like she's a bit ashamed of what she's doing. But you know when people just are slightly, it's not a massive tragic Greek tragedy flaw. It's just like, just a little bit not good enough, a little bit lazy. And then the problems that happen, and then how much you'd hate yourself.
Yeah.
Going, I did this to myself.
I think she's a brilliant writer. And I thought people were being very harsh because of the success of Such a Fun Age.
With Kylie Reid, it reminds me a little bit of Zadie Smith or Monica Ali, these women who become literary sensations, but it's also because of who they are.
Yes, partly that is attached to it, definitely.
Young, beautiful,
very talented.
Obviously incredibly bright, university-educated, but with a bit of an outsider perspective. They have this huge, like, fiery ascendancy. We're all so glad they exist. We're all so desperate for them to tell us about also desperate to read what they want to write. And then at the other side, I then think that they get this huge wall of establishment going, like, why would they be so critical?
Yeah. No, I was surprised. Mm. And I mean, I always read reviews because I find it, and not shit reviews, I find genuine criticism in that Claire Dederer way helpful sometimes, because I finished it and I was like, I'm really confused. And then when I came across that quote, I thought, oh yes, that is what my brain is feeling. So I thought, like, good criticism can sometimes clarify how you feel when you're like, that was sitting weird for me. I wasn't quite sure what she wanted me to think.
Yeah. So that's really true. Like, so I've mentioned Marianne Levy on the podcast before. So she wrote Don't Forget to Scream, which is sort of an amazing motherhood essays book. She reviewed Catherine Ryan's new show, you know, her family.
Oh, the parent one. Yes.
The parenting one. And it was so brilliant because it was a mum who gets it watching Catherine Ryan making a show about being a mum. And picking out the incredible quotes that just get thrown away by Catherine, or that you might just watch, go, you know, it's a Dave documentary. It's a comedian making jokes. You're absolutely right. A critic can highlight for
you. A good critic
who gets it.
Yeah.
Is sort of unfolding and explaining to someone who either hasn't watched it yet or might do, watch out for this. Don't let this moment pass you by.
And I think it's really interesting. God, I was about to say dichotomy. I'm so sorry.
Please, go on.
That's the thing with reviews and like the push and pull that we have with them. And like, I know you don't read them and you don't want them. And then I'm always like, oh, I read this and I read this interview because I always want more background information. And I think that maybe is a lack of confidence for myself of like, well, did other people agree with me? They did. I'm right about this. But we live in this world where there's too much sort of reviewing and not enough genuine criticism, because you don't have the paid journalism anymore and you don't have the critics who are, you know, respected in the way that we used to. But that world also existed with like one white man deciding what theatre is good or bad.
Yeah.
So it's not like it was amazing. But I think it's interesting sitting in this world that we exist of books and then reading some of the stuff I was reading, which was so cross with Kylie Reid. Well, this isn't the book you wrote last time. And I was reading some of them thinking, well, no, it's really different. And that's what I'm trying to get my head around. What didn't I like compared to the other one? But that's, I have to say, shout out to Sydney Morning Herald. I felt like that's the only one where I was like, oh, you're actually meeting her at her level and just dissecting it in a way where you're not just going, I liked your last one more.
I thought she was so canny. I thought, in terms of there being so many similar things that are clearly still on her mind and she still wants to explore in a different way, it meant that you could have a huge success and then another huge success.
I have to say, I can't...
If I was her publisher, so I'd be like, thanks, Kylie.
I can't wait for the third, like her next book. I do feel like she's a great writer. I will be always interested to what she said. But if someone said to me, I haven't read anything, I would say, read Such a Fun Age. I wouldn't say, read Come and Get It. I'd be like, oh no, I think that's a really brilliant... Mm. If you have no time and you're, where do I start? I'd be like... That's the one I would read, whereas it would Come and Get It. I'd be like, yeah, if you like her, absolutely give it a go. But if you're time poor, some people are.
Some people
That's what I would say.
The reason I don't read reviews is twofold. One, they make me sad because I've been badly reviewed.
And whereas I, Sarah, have never. No, I do know what you mean.
So I always think of the person who created something.
Yeah, I did feel horrible reading it for her. Yeah. I was like, oh my God.
So I get this sadness, horrible feeling. I never, ever... feel like glad that someone else is being told this is why they're not good enough, even when the person is much more successful than me and much more brilliant than me. It still feels like a horrible thing that a human being.
But that's bad reviewing. If somebody says lots of the reviews, oh, this is bad, but if someone's like, oh, I found this bit interesting, I didn't like this, it's criticism that versus reviewing.
I actually think that sometimes is more cruel. Do you remember once we were talking about how a therapist has said, you know, your inner voice, how they speak to you?
Oh yeah, yeah.
And you were describing how an inner voice would be like, oh, you're not good enough, you're a piece of shit, da da da. And I was like, oh, mine's really insidious, like, oh, that's a shame, did you try? So it sounds like it's my friend being like, oh my God, if only you weren't so fat.
And so mine's really vile.
So and then
of course,
I realized,
you fucking idiot. What did you expect to happen?
So at least you know it's an enemy.
Yeah,
so
you can definitely hear it.
And that's the problem with the reviewers. The ones who are like, I'm really intelligent and let me find the holes. I was just listening to If Books Could Kill, just another book podcast.
Yes.
They were playing the clips of the Naomi Wolf interview where she finds out her entire book was badly researched.
Oh God. Yes, we should caveat this. So this is Naomi Wolf. She goes on the radio. She's being interviewed about it.
On
and
Radio
someone
4,
basically...
Matthew Sweet.
In one interview, destroys her entire book's
argument.
Process,
her,
research.
Her argument was about homosexuality being punished criminally in the UK, and she had misunderstood a phrase from the courts. Yeah. Essentially, she thought it meant they were put to death, and it's the exact opposite. It was that they could have put them to death, but they decided not to. And, oh God, it's so painful. That's how I feel about reading.
Yeah. So, and in this interview, if you are inclined, he basically accidentally stumbles that she's missed something, and she realizes live on air that, her book doesn't make sense.
Yeah. But reviews in general, while that's a very, very extreme example of someone, I just don't like the feeling. And then the other side of it is, once I've read the opinion about myself or someone else, I can't get it out of my brain.
No, I'm the same.
And that's why I'd rather just not have them there. Because once they're there, it's almost like it then just sort of leaks and it taints. And you start to think, maybe it wasn't gold.
Oh, I still, we've talked about this before, like every terrible review, I still have the sentence burned.
Yeah.
There was one in Edinburgh. It was my birthday, because my birthday's in August. And it ended with, like, despite it being her birthday and the whole crowd singing to her, like, I did not have a good time or something. It was like, even though they were all enjoying it, I still think this is a terrible show. Yeah. And everyone had sung me happy birthday at the end. And I was like, wow, to find out there was a party pooper at your party. And then he writes about it.
This is exactly it, right?
Oh, it's so
you look out to an audience, they all seem to be smiling and receptive.
Yeah.
You meet that energy to find out that one person was sitting there dissenting, wishing you no goodwill,
not even like, it's not for me.
And that's what's hard, I find, about a book, right? So you put it out into the world with the best of intentions, and the fact that someone could be holding it in their hand with an eyebrow raised, typing, well, what is the point of this?
Seems unsure of its central goal.
What a stupid joke, like a rucksack. It makes me feel so protective. Put the book down, leave it alone.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't make you have it.
I know. You're right, it's the pressure, because that book did so well. Like, it was such a barnstormer.
Yeah.
They are all out with their sharpened pens.
I always feel so protective of people. Maybe it's more women, actually. Right? Maybe I feel protective of women. You have a success. You're Sally Rooney. You're Phoebe Waller-Bridge. Yeah. And then, journalists want to go, well, the reason it's not as good as you think it is, or the reason you're wrong to be enjoying this thing is actually,
I know. I think, and you do have to search for genuine criticism, and it's very satisfying. That's why I enjoyed that Claire Dedera book so much, because I thought she really delved into what criticism can do.
But also, I think she chooses things she's interested in,
and cares about,
and recognises as art.
Although that Claire Dedera quote from Monsters, if you haven't listened to that episode, where she says the reason she's a critic, her primary school teacher once said to her, Claire, you won't stop till you find out what's wrong with something. And I was like, that is a critic. Yeah. Like, that is what we are looking for.
Oh, I thought you were saying, are you a bit like that?
I think I am a little bit, and I don't love it about myself, but I think I'm a bit.
There's nothing wrong with it. You're
but like, I think also, I'm like, but also I'm really into like research. And so I won't just read reviews, I'll then read interviews, because I feel like I need more, Kylie. What were you thinking when you wrote this? I want to know more.
Yeah.
Like,
definitely fascinating.
Yeah, I'm like, and I actually found the interviews with her very helpful. And I was like, it made me understand what she was doing. And I thought, okay. Well, Sarah Pascoe.
But you're glad you read it.
I am glad I read it. Yeah, definitely. But yeah, I would say, if you haven't read any of her stuff.
Can I ask you a question?
You can.
We're reading now at a ferocious rate.
Ferocious.
Because of the podcast.
Because of the podcast. Ferocious.
Do you think...
It's ruining books.
not ruining books, but they're having... I feel like each book is having a harder and harder act to follow because of the books they're following.
Yeah, this had a hard act to follow. Yeah. I can't remember what I'd read. Oh, upcoming episode, Butter.
Oh,
and I found the transition from Butter to this very difficult.
Yes.
And I am trying to be aware of that as I'm reading. Yes. And if I get a bit like, I don't like this, I'm trying to be like, whoa. Mm-hmm. You're not giving this the space and time that it needs. Yeah. You have to meet them like people.
Yes.
And be like, what does this book need from me?
This person talks slowly. This person talks in French.
Yeah. This person is a translation from Japanese.
Yeah. This person's jumping around a lot. This person's talking over me constantly. It's me and Carrie.
You chose to download it.
Life imitating art, right? Yeah. Do you remember a few weeks ago, you got a text message from Catherine Ryan?
Oh, God, right. Yes.
Okay, so Catherine Ryan was on Michael McIntyre's big show. Carrie and lots of other people didn't know that. So Michael McIntyre, what he does on this show is he takes their phone and he sends a text to everyone, and then they read out the replies, ha, 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 ha. And the text that Catherine had was, I'm about to go on the Graham Norton show. I'm telling a story.
A funny story about your name when we first met, or something?
No, a funny story about the first time we met and how weird you are. are.
Oh, yes.
I'm going to have to name you because it works better, but do you want some money, basically?
And that's what the text WhatsApp I got on Friday night at like 8:30.
And it made people paranoid and upset, and people were texting and going, what did I do when we first met?
Yeah.
And the money thing was very insulting. And that's what I thought was so clever about what Kylie Reid does in this book.
Because it's a good comparison. Yes.
Yes, isn't it?
Yes.
And do you see why I had to make a podcast longer by saying
you did. No, that was really good. And I messaged you immediately and was like, I just got this really weird message from Catherine. And you were like, oh, don't worry. She's on Michael McIntyre's show. It's really normal. I got one about Joe Lycett. Do you want to divulge the Joe Lycett one?
I got Catherine's one as well. They read my reply out. And I was like, why do I feel famous? Because Michael McIntyre read out my text when I'm on TV myself sometimes.
That's hilarious.
Isn't it? So Joe Lycett's one on the Michael McIntyre
show. It was a party, wasn't it?
It was an invitation, a picture saying there's a big launch tonight. We can't tell you what it's for. And then just basically an address in Soho, 10 o'clock. And obviously, you know, new mum hasn't been out in a long time. And I thought, this will be lovely. It's 10 o'clock. The kids will be in Bed-Stein. Can I go? And he was like, I said, it's last minute. Joe's having a big announcement. This is going to be so exciting. All my friends will be there.
This is so painful.
I was like, getting ready.
Oh, I find stuff like that so painful. Like, it actually makes my heart hurt. But yes, that is a very good argument. You've made me like the book more.
That is my job.
That is your job. She will always defend books over people.
Thank you for listening to the Weirdos Book Club. My novel Weirdo is now available in paperback. Cariad's tiny wrists will be pleased. And Cariad's book You Are Not Alone is also available in all good bookshops.
You can find out about all the upcoming books we're going to be discussing on our Instagram. Please head there and follow us at Sarah and Cariad's Weirdos Book Club, all one word, and let us know what you think.
Thank you for reading with us.
We like reading with you.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Lucy Beaumont.
And guess what? I'm Sam Campbell.
If you've enjoyed this podcast, you might enjoy our podcast. It's called Lucy and Sam's Perfect Brains.
We have a podcast and it might be, I probably don't want to sound, you know, like I'm bragging, but it's dynamite. It is electric. It's high voltage. And please, we really need you to listen. You don't understand how much we need this.
Is it on all the platforms?
Oh, it absolutely is. But this one's out now. Lucy and Sam's Perfect Brains.